You're listening to Maneuvering Mondays, a podcast about transforming work culture.
This is the second part of the episode, and in this part, we have invited one or more guest experts to share their best advice to Marie from Zebra Apps. And your hosts are Anne-Katrine Seier
and Ivana Rosendahl.
And for this commentary episode, we have invited one guest speaker to discuss the story part. Welcome to Benoit. You're a partner at The Ready, where you work with organizational design and transformations. And I saw on your LinkedIn page that your mission is to change how the world works from business as usual to brave new work. And I'm really curious to hear something more about this mission. So what do you mean by this statement?
Very good question. We noticed, and I'm pretty sure that a lot of people around the world in the working environment have noticed that we are using the same approach. We've been doing that for years now. And when we look at even the first org chart that we like to present in our introduction, it's the first one that has been developed is from 1910. And when you look at this org chart from 1910, it's exactly the same as you find in any places, in any workplaces now. So what does that mean? It means that we've been using the same methodologies and same practices for more than 100 of years. Already, we are a self-managed organization. We are practicing on ourselves what we bring to our clients. And we are experimenting all the time with all the most innovative approaches in terms of meeting management or meeting structure, ways of taking decisions, setting our strategic outcomes, everything that is around the 12 fields of the OS canvas we've developed. So we talk about OS because we think that the organization has an operating system. So globally, this is what we do. And we love to talk about this because it's about the people. It's about the system and how can we work on the system to improve the way of working.
And that's really interesting. And I think really on point for the episode we're going to talk about, the story part we're going to talk about today.
Before we dive into the story part, I would like us to start with a check-in question. And that check-in question will be, what have you experienced in the last couple of weeks that made you reflect about the nature of work? And we'll go AK first, then Benoit, then I'll finish off.
Something that happened in the recent weeks is that my baby had her 5 months shot. So she's been really upset. And I think my reflection is how powerful it is to be strongly connected to a purpose in terms of surviving when things get really tough, like really long nights without sleep. And of course, I know that it's different, the purpose you have in your workplace, typically at least, than the one of connecting to a baby. But I think it still holds true for my work life. I really like to be connected to the purpose, to be motivated. So this has been very clear for me the past weeks.
On my side, I would say we started to work with a new client, and one of the first mission we had is to connect with two different teams that are closely working together. One is working on research and development, and the other one on the digital side of the products and services. And there is I experienced a real paradox about two teams that need to work more closely together, and that because they're already overwhelmed about all the project that they have, and the more we get we work with them, and the more they have realize or get aware that they have gaps in the way they're working together. So there is this paradox of working together more closely to facilitate or make their workflow more fluid, and at the same time piling up new needs and new experiments or new projects. But indeed, it seems that just working on these specific gaps is really helping a lot the rest of the organization. So it's always uncovering something that felt obvious at first, and finally we're going in not a different direction, but it's like a balance to find each time. And we take something out to pull something new in, and it's an ever-going process. And
That is interesting that you, when you interact with the system, then the system also changes, and then you interact with it in new ways.
Yeah, it's it's also about realizing that some things, like what I said at the beginning, you realize that there are some practices or ways of doing things that are not working at all, or not work, used to work, but are not working anymore. So being capable of letting go and start something new, something that is what we call radical, but at a non-radical scale, is also bringing a lot of fresh air to the teams.
Well, I'll check in with an experience that I've had the past 2 weeks. The past 2 weeks I've been in California, I do improv comedy as a hobby in Copenhagen. And the past 2 weeks I visited a theater, an improv theater in San Jose. I visited and two different theaters in San Francisco. I both did classes and also watched some improv. And the funny thing is that it felt exactly the same as my own theater in Copenhagen. So it's funny that the culture of an improv group apparently is the same wherever you are. And I reflected a lot about that. How can that be? But I think, especially in improv, because we have a lot of rules for how we are with each other, because we need to have rules in order to create something on the spot. It needs to feel safe. You need to trust your fellow teammates. You need to feel free to be you. And we are very vocal about those rules. I think that culture just has to be more or less the same wherever you are. So for me, that was an eye-opening experience.
I like the idea that there is a code of improv, and maybe it helps people to shape some behaviors around that.
Well, I think we are all warmed up and checked in. So Benoit, let's start diving into the story part. First of all, could you tell us in your own words what you feel this episode is about?
What is really interesting about this episode is about this mission of knowing why people are leaving the company and trying to fix that. And the this first character that has the role of finding out and making a proposal to the organization to fix the problem is she's working all alone. And I felt like it's really interesting to explore the way she's what is her journey. So a couple of things that I noticed is the relationship of Mary, this first character, and her boss, or this HR manager, Mark, that they are is trying to pull her off balance. And this is one of the terms that I recalled about pushing her to make a presentation of her solution with a leadership or cultural program to fix the problem of why people are leaving the company. And Mary discovered that Mark is playing a game with her.
When you were reading this, Benoit, did you think of any models or frameworks or kind of keys to start unlocking the story a little bit?
The interesting thing that popped in my mind was one of the first principles we're working with at Loretta is the complexity conscious. And Mary is working on discovering why people are leaving the company. So she starts to make interviews or meet people, but she's lacking a lot of content and information because Mark has all this data. And she's also getting through an exploration from, if she was in the dark, going from one point to another, but not looking at the whole system. And when I think about models, obviously this is maybe one of my bias because of what I said about the brave new work, trying to understand the global picture. What are the different fields in the organization that are in play around one tension? It can be the question of membership. It can be the question of maybe meetings or compensation, or even the strategy that is not clear that pushed people to drop off in their job. or if it's the mastery, I don't feel skilled enough or even in a safe environment to continue on my work. So for the moment, what I tried to pinpoint when I was reading this chapter is what Mari is exploring right now. And so she's exploring the membership and the mastery part and the authority part as well, based on Mark's game and what's happening for her and missing some information, which is another field. However, talking about the OS canvas is a good thing, but there's another model that is more, I would say, a personal model. And Mari is also triggered in her self-esteem in the way she interacts with other people. So there is also something that she could look at: what's happening to me and what patterns am I following personally and in the system. So in a nutshell, what did the system push me to bring in the organization as a behavior? And at the same time, why do I react like that?
Really good points. I have a few follow-up questions. So first of all, you mentioned the OS canvas. Is this like an actual, just for people who don't know it, is it like a physical canvas, or how would you work with this model?
This is a physical canvas. It's 12 lenses of to look at the organization. So we have very briefly purpose, strategy, workflow, membership, authority, resources. I would try to do that by my memory, but I will take something to help me. Meetings, structure, innovation, information, compensation. Resources. So when you look at the organization through these lenses and you question yourself, what's holding me back from doing the best work of my life? And Mari could, you know, ask herself, what's holding me back from doing the best work of my life for this project, for this mission? She could easily pinpoint that she has a tension in information. She has a tension in her own mastery. She has a tension in the strategy about the project itself or the purpose of this project itself. And she could question herself through the canvas. Usually we don't use it on a personal level, but it's still useful. Now, I would say the thing is, when I think about this model, it's more about bringing people together and think about it. Instead of going from one to one, from one point to another, from one person to another, and try to gather all this information and make a summary or a synthesis of by yourself, bringing people in the same room and asking what is holding us back from doing the best work in our life in the organization? Why are people leaving the organization? And then you can surface a lot of things.
So would you start with people in the leadership group, or would it also be people in the organization who are not leaders?
Both are working.
Yeah.
Both are working, and usually looking at it with your team is really helpful, because it can be the operating system of your own team, but it's also part of, embedded in a bigger operating system. However, it's not because we have a model that people from any level in the organization couldn't use it or wouldn't be capable of using it. Everybody understands.
Yeah.
Every time you ask, people have answers.
It sounds like a powerful tool to bring some alignment into the company. And also in this case, where we know that the initial findings are that people think that something happened in the past year that that is making people resign. So it would be probably helpful to look at where do we see the tensions in these 12 different lenses. Fields. Yeah.
And the good thing is, like I shared in my check-in, usually we come with a quite easy or understandable problem or tension. But this is where complexity or consciousness comes. We're in a system, and a system can show you it's like an iceberg. You see the tip of the iceberg, the events. People are leaving. But when you look a little bit below the water, then you realize that it's recurring. people are leaving and leaving and leaving. This is where you know that you're really in a system. It's just a one-time event. So there is something fostering this cycle and making these events visible. And below that, you can look at the structure. This is where it's the OS canvas starts to be really interesting. What's in our system that pushed people out? And behind that, and I mentioned the principle of complexity consciousness, but there are all the principles, and every organization has principles or beliefs or values. This is what is at the bottom of the iceberg. So when we use the OS canvas, it's a good entry point to be at a good level of understanding, not just focusing on the events and understanding what's behind the we usually say the symptom. What are the real causes? Because in Mary's story, the story starts by the only difference with other organizations is that we don't have free Coca-Cola, which is, you know, it feels like is this the solution? No, obviously not. We have to dig deeper. And for that, we need some models to help us frame our thinking and understand differently, or at least ask us questions.
Well, you also mentioned the individual level, Benoit, and Marie's self-esteem. And I think in the story there are definitely two places where her self-esteem is challenged. One is in her daughter's kindergarten. And then the other one is, whenever she talks to her boss, Mark, something happens with her self-esteem. Do you have any thoughts on what kind of dynamics she's part of?
Well, when I mentioned self-esteem, I have another hat, I would say, coming before I got into the ready. I'm a human element practitioner, so the human element is an approach to how to analyze how self-esteem, personal self-esteem, impact the interrelationship with other people, and foster or hinder the team performance. And what is interesting is really basically when you look at the self-esteem, there are three main dimensions: there are inclusiveness, control, and openness. Inclusiveness touches to do I have value in the group? The real question and the feeling is, do I bring value to the group? Am I included because I have a value in this group? The second dimension is around control. Am I able to face the situation? Is it the feeling that you have behind the control dimension? And the last one is, do people like me? Am I a likable person? And in Mary's case, she's been acknowledged by the CEO, but not by Mark. And she's facing a project where she's alone. She has to deal with this project all alone, nearly find the solution by herself. And Mark is also playing a lot on her capacity to deal with this project. He's not helping her with the information that he has. He's putting her on the spot with a presentation of a program she didn't build. And Mary is triggered by that. She's like, she feels like I'm not, you know, she fears that she's not able to face the situation. And she's so absorbed by these questions and how can I face or deliver or find a solution, that she's also forgetting a lot of other things, like the flowers for her daughter's kindergarten event. And so she got a second time triggered because the other person says, okay, I bought flowers because I thought you would, there was a chance that you didn't bring flowers. So this is where she got strapped in a spiral of ever trying to show the others that she's capable of doing the work, capable of being accountable, or, you know, make sure she holds her promise. And it's not happening because she's just a human being. And when you start to overthink and you depend only on yourself or rely only on yourself, then you get in these situations.
Well, how can you get out of a spiral like that? Because I think that's a very good way to put it. Her work life is impacting her private life, and vice versa, and there's just no room for maneuvering. But how can she get out?
This is a really personal perspective, and I would say, because I can't understand, I can't answer for herself. She has to, be aware of what's happening and in which system she is. Then she will leverage the right, actions or possibilities to get out of it. But on a personal level, I would say when I get into what is a rigidity, because you're not getting flexible. You're trying harder and harder. You know, you try to control more things. You try to show everyone that you have value, that you're part of the team. Then you start to work more and more alone by yourself. So my personal trick on that is, this is a model. It's called the Janusian thinking. Take the opposite of what you're doing right now and just imagine what would be the output. So working more and more alone, I would take the opposite and try to bring people in the room and share together, like and prepare some and ask them what questions should we ask ourselves about why people are leaving, instead of telling everyone for the kindergarten event, I take care of this, I take care of that. Just ask for help. I'm overwhelmed, and this is also humility to say, but this is the counter path that she's taking. She's telling the world unconsciously that she will do it. She's capable of it, but sometimes you're not. So let it go. The more you try to control things, the more you should try to let it go, and rely on others and ask humbly for help.
I love that perspective, and also that when you have been trying the same thing again and again, then maybe it's time to try the opposite thing.
Yeah. I learned a saying in France. I'm pretty sure it exists somewhere else, but saying that trying the same thing over and over again is the and expecting a different outcome. This is the definition of madness.
Yeah.
And I was also curious to get back to what you said in the beginning about the dynamics between her and her superior Mark, mm-hmm. because I think you also mentioned this this element of the story where she's realizing that that he's playing a game with her, mm-hmm. and I think that would be interesting to just dive into. So what are your thoughts on their relation, and do you think she could do anything differently than what she does to improve it?
Yeah, I will stick to the side of the OS for a moment with mm-hmm. Operating system of the organization. Well, what happens? There's a couple of things I would say. As I mentioned, Mark is holding back some information from her. He has all the details about the interviews he did with the people that were leaving. So there's certainly a lot of very good information there, potentially, if questions were oriented to understand why people are leaving, because potentially the interviews could also be really light touch and not orienting to this question. This is one thing. So clarifying the fact that she's missing information in this mission, this is really, sharing this tension and making a proposal. Mark, you have this. My proposal is you give me the raw report of every interview, and I will deal with that. Because, maybe Mark is expecting, thinks she wants something neat, clean, and professional from, an HR. This is one aspect. The other thing is, the other event in the game, in this game, is that Mark is putting her on the spot for the next Wednesday to make a presentation in front of the board. Leadership board to present a culture program, and she goes for it. She will do the presentation. okay, she, because she's trying to prove to everyone that she's doing, she's the right person. Because she, what is not clear in their relationship is, what are the decision rights to put someone in such a presentation? Has Mark really the right to tell the others she will do the presentation? Because then, if he has the right, he also holds a part of the accountability of the success of this presentation. Decision rights and accountabilities are coming together. This is not something, and this is something that is really implicit in organizations. What decision rights do you have? Because if it was really explicit, like in a role charter or in the team charter, then she could come and say, hey, I didn't say it's safe to try. I didn't consent to that, and you don't have the decision rights. So this meeting is not going to happen.
I totally agree. I also think it's kind of a red flag to just commit her to do that without even at least telling her. I mean, the best thing maybe would be to have a conversation and ask her and talk about like what would be the right way forward. But he doesn't even do that. He just like does it without involving her. So I think that says something about the dysfunctional collaboration.
So there's these decision rights, and decision rights are not necessarily exactly the right spot, depending in which place you work, but at least a working agreement about saying we consent for such things or topics or actions. Consenting means answering the question, is it safe to try? By bringing this consent approach and safe to try, there is also a question around maybe in her mind it's safe to try to present something to the board. Maybe the culture in this organization is based on the principle of progress over perfection. But so far, in my understanding of the reading of the story, it's not what I would say. It will be the opposite. It will be more like a culture with a principle of perfection, even over progress. You have to show that you nailed it and it's perfect. Yeah. And we have a program that we can just launch the next day, which is absolute madness.
I also kind of more get the vibe that she's just saying yes because she wants to show him that she can do it, and not maybe that wouldn't be the best way forward. Maybe she should have commented on that he just committed her without agreeing to it. So I think it's also like a power struggle somehow, like she's trying to stay in control, like you said earlier. So it's back to her self-esteem.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, the term game, I was really into the game design for a while, and based on a book called Homo Ludens, I really liked the definition of a game. A game is a magic circle where you step in freely and willingly. When Mark plays this obfuscation game, he plays a game with her. But he's not playing a game, he's toying with her. So it's manipulation, and it's, so she didn't play it, she didn't consent for playing that game. So what do you do when people force you to play a game? What do you say? Actually, I didn't say yes to that game. You're playing that game, that's the rules you're using. I don't want to play that game. And you try to step out. Maybe you'll tell me in an organization it's not possible. But still, just by acknowledging that there is a game, you make people aware of that.
And I'm also thinking about how right now it's very much like Mark versus Marie instead of Mark and Marie versus the problem of the company. So it's completely like it's just a waste of time to have these power struggles instead of working together to solve the retention issue.
And I totally agree. This is also a grown up problem, because when you look at kids, when they play a game and they're fed up with the rules, they just shift the rules, change the rules, make a proposal saying, hey, I don't like that game anymore. I don't want to play it anymore. Let's play like this. And then you can witness a proposal and consent game about, you know, finding the right rules for both players to still play willingly and freely and enjoy the game. So just by acknowledging the game and to Mark and say, hey, I feel like this is still my reality. This is, you know, Mark is not necessarily feeling the things the same way, but just this is my reality. This is what I sense. And I don't want to play that game. Now, here's my proposal. We can win together to tackle this problem quickly, efficiently. And at the end, you're the HR VP. You will be the one that has, you know, all the pride and the congratulations for doing that work. Is that good for you? Because this is certainly one of the problems of Mark. He feels threatened by Mary and the fact that she has this mission and he doesn't. He's the HR VP. People are leaving because his HR policy is not working. That's what he believes, in my mind.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I like the way that you frame that. Even in a workplace, the game is something that is voluntary and something that is up for negotiation and something that needs to be consented to by all parties, or people can change the rules or leave.
Yeah, well, actually, people leave because this is the last call that they have. No, but if you're in an organization where you feel a tension because you feel that the rules, the working agreements, the decision rights, accountabilities, everything that has been set up in that social game don't, you know, hold you back or is also maybe not working for you, then come up with a proposal. Say, hey, I'd like to change that. Do you consent? You'll never hear me do you agree? Agreeing is about personal preference. Consenting is about having a zone of tolerance. If you come to me with a new set of, you know, adjustments in the rules of the game between us, maybe you won't care about them. But if I ask you, do you agree? You will look for, is it cool? Is it nice? Do I like it? And you may say no. When I ask you, is it safe to try? Do you consent? Then it's just about, is there anything that is blocking me from, you know, enjoying the game again? No, then I can say, safe to try. And you have your adjustments in the rules, and it helps me work in a better way and feel more more empowered or more joyful and happy to work with you. So this is one of the constraints of the organizations nowadays, the major problem of the organizations, their capacity to change. When we talk about change, it's not about changing the people. It's about changing the operating system, because when you change the rules, and sometimes it's a tiny change, minor tweak, and sometimes this is something huge, but when you have this capacity to change continuously, then you continuously adapt the game and everybody feels involved and freely playing and willingly playing. So people won't leave.
That's a really good point. And I actually also had a note on this about changing the operating system. What is needed to actually change an operating system? I suppose that's not necessarily an easy task. I mean, apart from establishing the knowledge, like common knowledge about the operating system, what if you want to change it? What would your first step be?
We always say where the energy is. If you have something holding you back, tackle that first. The problem is, and I use the word problem, is really in a meaningful way. The problem is we think we should change everything because we've tackled a big problem. And that's pretty nice. The ego is talking there. You know, we have to tackle a big problem. But this is, yeah, it never works. So coming back to this Genusian thinking, take it the other way around. Start small. Start with tensions and try to experiment something different. So based on the tension, make a proposal for a new practice, a new way of working together, a new rule of game together, and experiment. And this experimentation part is crucial because a lot of organizations come, you know, we've analyzed the problem. We now have a solution. We worked extensively with that. We have a big master plan for you know, rolling the solution everywhere to everyone, and nothing happens. We spend millions of euros or dollars just to, especially also with consultants, to have a very good PowerPoint and a master plan, but nothing's changed. Because when the change is too big, people are frightened. They're scared about it. But when you and they don't need necessarily feel this tension for them. It's someone else who has attention. So come and start small, experiment. And we usually say, and I said it already, try a radical change at a non-radical scale. And experiment. And you'll show yourself and prove yourself and the rest of the team that it's beneficial. Recently, one of the leaders we're working with came to us and said, I have about 14 hours of one-on-one meetings per week. I don't have time to work. I spend too much time in one-on-ones. We said, okay, here's a practice. It's a meeting moratorium, meaning you will cancel every meetings, one-on-one meetings that you have. But by saying that, you don't cancel for the rest of your days in this company all the one-on-one meetings. It's not the point. It's you cancel every meeting that you have for the next 2 weeks. And in your experiment, to make it safe to try, you explain everyone why you're doing this. And telling them that they can ask for a new one-on-one meeting with you by providing the purpose of this one-on-one meeting and check with them if they can find the answer somewhere else already in the organization. So this is quite radical for a manager.
I love this very concrete example.
And that's definitely doable. I think I've been that manager at one point.
All managers are going through that. You know, too many meetings. This is actually when we use the OS Canvas and map tensions, too many meetings is always there. Meetings is always a problem. So this is a way. We're starting with other teams with a new meeting structure for their weekly meetings because so far they were spending a lot of time preparing the agendas, prepare updates, even some slides. And when they go through this meeting for 1 hour, it was just updating each other. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't really updating. It was just showing that we did some work. And we transformed that with what is called an action meeting. We have an article on Medium on that, how to host the best meeting of your week. And in this structure, it's more about actions and how to unblock the work. And the update part is like 5 to 10 minutes in an hour. And the major part is 45 minutes of triaging needs to unblock the work to the rest of the team. And we usually do that for 5 or 6 weeks in a row. And then we experiment and we can say at the end, is it working? Is it helping? You know, we retrospect on that, on this experiment. And if everybody is happy with these new rules of the game, new game, they will say, okay, we govern that. We all consent to say, this is our meeting structure for the future. So once again, it's a radical way of doing a meeting, holding a meeting and facilitating a meeting. It's really uncomfortable at first, but we do it for 6 weeks. So it's a non-radical scale. It's not every team should do that from now on in the future because it's so cool.
Benoit, what do you think, what would you like to happen next in the story?
I really hope that Mary would have some coaching or advice that helps her get out of her own patterns. And stop trying to, she's fighting a system on her own. Instead of fighting a system, dance with it. Be complexity conscious about the system and dance with it. Highlight things with people. I said we have already the complexity conscious principle, but we also have the people positive principle. This is the second thing I would hope for her is being people positive. What Mark does is this obfuscation game. This is a nasty game. At the same time, Mark is protecting himself. there's something, he's a good person, you know, you will meet not that many bad, really bad person in your life. That's pretty much the exception. So most of the people are motivated to do their work. They want to do good. They want to look good and be socially recognized. So be people positive with Mark, because he's certainly trapped in the system like you are.
Exactly. That's a good point, that the OS is actually pushing Mark to play the game.
Yeah.
Well, Benoit, this has been an absolute pleasure having you here with us to discuss this part of the story. Where can listeners find you if they want to continue the conversation with you or learn any more about what you've been sharing with us?
When you say you, Benoit, you can on LinkedIn, obviously. And The Ready is www.theready.com. And we are also, I mentioned a couple of one article that we have on Medium, the platform, with all these articles. So we had a lot of really good articles about the OS Canvas, about one-on-one meetings, about a lot of things that I shared. And I think it's, if you type The Ready on any search engine, you'll find us.
Thank you so much for being on the show with us and sharing this time in the studio.
Thank you. You too. It's been a real pleasure. And it was pretty fun.
You're listening to Maneuvering Mondays, a podcast about transforming work culture.
What are your thoughts on Marie's situation? Have you had a similar experience? And what would you have done? Join the conversation on our LinkedIn page and let's maneuver Mondays together.